18 hours ago, we lost a chopper carrying a cabinet minister and his aide from this charming little country. We've got a transponder fixed on their position. About here.
This cabinet minister, does he always travel on the wrong side of the border?
Apparently, they strayed off course, and we're fairly certain they're in guerrilla hands.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
Dylan! You son of a bitch!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Nextlander Watchcast here, part of the Nextlander family of podcasts, as we've called it before. We are back on our cinematic bullshit this week. We are returning to the world of majestic cinema to once again knock off a film that was on Brad's bucket list of things that he had never seen before, which I, again, when you told me you did not think you had seen this film before, I damn near fell out of my chair, Brad.
Having watched it now in the last 24 hours, I can promise you I've never seen it before.
Yeah, you would know, right? Like, yes. I was right when I said that.
Yes. This is not something that I casually forgot.
Well, I have seen Predator before. Vinny Caravella, you have certainly seen Predator before.
I have certainly seen Predator. Out of all the movies we've watched, I've probably seen this one the most and probably the most recent.
And I'm going to say that probably holds true also for Dan Reichert, who has never been on this on the Watchcast before. So by default, this is the one you've seen the most. But I bet you've seen this movie a lot.
Many, many times, even this year. And I'm glad to be here and bring some legitimacy to this as someone who has a degree in film studies from an accredited national university.
That's why we brought you.
Of course, yes. But you had to twist my arm and get me to watch Predator again. And sure enough, I did that a few days ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I think, at least in my estimation, an all-timer as far as action cinema goes, as certainly as action sci-fi goes. Before we get into what I want to hear Brad's first impressions of Predator here in a moment. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about our personal histories with the film. Dan Reichert, do you remember where you were in the world and what your first experience with Predator was?
Distinctly, because I was a kid and my stepdad at the time, he ran a movie like rental place, like a mom and pop movie rental place. And so when it closed, he brought all the VHSs home. So we had a ton of VHSs. Dude, and I knew like one of the first movies I remember seeing was Terminator 2, and I was obsessed with it. So I would just like dig through all these VHS tapes looking for Arnold on the cover. Just like, I want more of this guy. He's awesome. And I watched most of the stuff I found, except Predator is one that, like, you know, I'm probably like 7 or 8 years old at this point. I put in Predator. I already love all, I saw Terminator 1 and 2, loved it. Then I put in Predator, and I'm into it until the part where he kind of moves the brush out of the way and there's the three hanging bodies without skin on it. Mm-hmm. And even as a kid who loved Terminator and violent action movies and stuff, I was just like, I'm not ready for this yet. And I ejected it and I never saw it again until college.
Oh, wow. So
there was a huge gap between like 7 and like, you know, 19 where I didn't see it at all. And then of course, many, many times since I was 19, but
so you really, you straight up missed out all the money stuff in that movie. You got to, because there's like, like two things happen in that movie by that point.
All the helicopter stuff at the beginning, like that movie goes from zero to incredible faster than maybe any movie I've ever seen. I'm just like watching it now. I'm just like, so in within like 3 minutes, just helicopters and cigars and guys just yelling at each other and being assholes. And it's just the best thing. But then the bodies. And
dude, I've got so many things I want to ask you for. Like, first of all, what the fuck you had what is it like having a video rental store in the family?
I want to say it wasn't everything. I mean, and here's the thing. My stepdad bounced between like 900 jobs. He's still doing that. You know, he this was one of his many ventures. And I think he brought home some boxes. So I don't mean to make it seem like we had the entire store. But he opened a joint ice cream and video rental shop.
I see. Okay. So it's not like you could
just go in having a Blockbuster. And it wasn't like throughout my entire youth. We just had a bunch of VHS tapes that had like the stickers of the rental store on it, you know, so.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Hang on. Like, did you make it through stuff like RoboCop in this era? Like, I'm
you know what?
Shocked
I didn't
to hear
see RoboCop. RoboCop for the first time was in college.
Oh, wow.
And I sat down, like I watched every movie in college, just drunk with friends. And I just wanted to see stuff blow up. And I watched it and I was like really disappointed when I saw it. And I was like, man, there wasn't even that much action. I think me and my friends were just joking and stuff. And like, I think all of the like satire and all that stuff just went right the fuck over my head. And it wasn't until a few years ago, I watched it with Bianca because she hadn't seen it. We were doing it for our podcast at the time. And we actually like sat and paid attention to it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, this is fucking brilliant. Which was exactly my experience with Starship Troopers. So all that Verhoeven stuff that like I watched in college or high school because I wanted to see stuff blow up and I was disappointed by. I watched as an older, wiser man, and I was like, oh, this that is actually incredibly in brilliant.
Yes.
So I definitely appreciate that now.
Okay. Vinny, where were you in the world when Predator first came into your life?
Gosh, I don't remember. I mean, this was, Predator came out late 80s?
87.
87. So I probably saw it not too long after, you know, it came to VHS. I don't think I saw it in the theater. Mm-hmm. So... I was probably also too young to see Predator. I'm pretty sure I made it past the bodies. I made it to the end of that movie because I have memories as a kid not understanding a lot of what was happening, especially with Billy, with Billy's scene on the bridge or whatever, mm-hmm. not really understanding that, not really understanding the mud stuff and why that would why that works, and. Or a lot of the things just kind of was like, oh, I don't get it. What's happening at the end of this movie? This makes no sense. Like, why is he talking? How does this crab laugh? I don't know. But like now I go back and I'm seeing it now and it's amazing.
Laugh at young Vinny and say, oh, you were so innocent.
I was way too innocent, and it's. It has a very different, it's in a different category of movie for me now. Like back then, I think I'm with Dan of like, oh, this is like hardcore action movie. And now I look at it, I'm like, oh, this is cheesy slasher like flick. This is military.
It's a big budget version of that.
Yeah. Next. This is like you replace Predator with Jason and replace military dudes with camp kids. And like, that's kind of what this is. Dan, you're making a face.
Well, I was thinking about that because like I've definitely put it in that camp of like, you know, hardcore action sci-fi, kind of the same boat as like a Terminator or something. But I was watching it a few months ago on like a Twitch watch party, and somebody in the chat said something that I'd never considered, and that it actually like really smartly kind of turns some action tropes on their head by like the beginning thing is very much just like pure 80s action of just these super masculine dudes going in to fuck stuff up and shoot everyone and quip and all that stuff. But then all of a sudden they are the ones being hunted, and all of a sudden these like super tough guys are all shitting their pants because they're the ones that are, you know, the prey at this point. I never thought of it that way.
Like, not to skip ahead to the end already, but like, I've watched some of the special features on the Blu-ray, and like McTiernan and people like that are in there talking about, like, I don't know that it was exactly an intentional bait and switch, but it was definitely like an intentional like genre change in the middle. You know what I mean? Because like Schwarzenegger was coming straight off of Commando, and they literally just like make the first 20-30 minutes of this movie like another Commando, right? It's just like, here's just another tough, muscle-bound dudes blowing away a bunch of bad guys.
Just flying into a place to fuck it up.
Yeah. Right. And then it turns, and then it goes sci-fi and horror and slasher. Like, I think that was like a pretty intentional subversion.
Oh, very much so. And I mean, and we'll talk about it more, but like I watched the commentary track for this with McTiernan, which, by the way, if you've never listened to it, if you like really boozy, hazy, kind of just sort of like riffing off the cuff, like I'm telling these stories like they're at a cocktail party kind of commentary, this is a good one for that, because he barely remembers like multiple shots. The stuff he does remember is mostly him just being like, yeah, you know, one of the producers suggested we hire Arnold Schwarzenegger's lawyer for the movie, and we got like a 5% discount on his salary, and that's how I got the movie. And you know, stuff like that. But there was one thing in there where he was talking about like the scene where they're all firing into the jungle at nothing. And he's just musing at length about like, you know, at this point in Hollywood, like basically they were manufacturing scenes to be sold as pornography, but like gun porn. Mm-hmm. Like the way shots were being constructed was, we are selling you the most badass shots we can of people firing guns. But I wanted to subvert that by having a big shot of that where they hit literally nothing.
When Max started going crazy with the Gatling gun, I thought Dutch was going to run up and be like, dude, stop wasting ammo. What are you doing? And instead, they all join in to the point that I was pretty sure they shot every bullet they had.
So dumb.
Those rented ferns were not going back to the store anytime soon. I will say, just for briefly, my experience with it, I saw this movie, I'm going to say I was around 10 or 11 years old. Mm. I was at I was at someone's house. It was like a family friend, and the parents of the you know, like the parents were all out doing something. I can't remember what it was. So we were just hanging around this family friend's house with a couple of other kids that were roughly my age, and they had rented Predator. And this was at 11 in the morning on some random weekend. And they're like, we should just watch Predator. I'm like, I've never seen it. Sure. I thought it was like a scary movie. And I was like all girded for it. And when I saw those skinless people, let me tell you, I definitely had a moment of like, oh, what have I done to myself here? But then by the time you get past that and you get into all the gun porn stuff and just the fucking, you know, hunter hunted stuff, like I was all the way bought in on it. I fell in love instantly.
I have to know what our first viewing felt like.
It is so weird to watch this movie now in my 40s in 2022, having lived through the decades that I've lived through. It's like, this felt like watching the thing from which like almost everything else I have ever experienced descended from.
Yes. I was going to say
like seeing Alien for the first time and being like, oh, that's where everything got that.
But it's also it's also the spawning point of so many parodies. Like they did it sincerely in this movie. And then every movie that was making fun of action movies is kind of referencing a scene from Predator, especially that village scene, which is just, it's hard to not look at that as parody as it's happening. But like, no, I think they're pretty sincere about that.
It's
and the helicopter with Little Richard playing and like taking the chew and all that.
Long, tall Sally.
Yeah, sexual Tyrannosaurus.
It's weird. Like, as much as Arnold Schwarzenegger was like the action star of the 80s, I mean, like, you know, debate Stallone, I guess, or whatever. But like,
Stallone was the filmmaker.
It's
Arnold was the action star.
Yeah, right. And like, as much as I have always identified him with Terminator, like watching this felt like, like seeing him in the jungle with the vest and everything, it was like, this is the archetypal form of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And in fact, like the archetypal form of every 80s action hero ever. It's like,
yeah, the cover of Contra. It's just like I was thinking
literally
that, like,
is the cover of Contra.
That's quite literally what I'm actually thinking about here is like, oh my God, that's where the Contra cover came from. But that's what I mean. Like, it's like everything has been influenced by this.
Is this the like prime coolest like look for Arnold, like prime ass, you know, mid 80s face paint, just loaded up with guns in the jungle? Like, has he ever looked cooler than in this movie?
I mean, I think, okay, if you're just saying 80s, no, I think this is it. I think this is definitely the one. I think that you could make an argument that by the time Terminator 2 rolled around, Schwarzenegger kind of had taken over as the de facto Schwarzenegger.
With the shotgun spin reload. Yeah.
Sunglasses, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, in terms of just like the number one action star of all time, you know, Arnold just being the archetype for an action star, in terms of movie titles, Terminator and Predator are two of the most badass possible names that actually really fit the movies, right?
And like Commando, for that matter.
And Commando, Conan. He's got the best titles.
Yeah.
Conan, I've still never seen either Conan movie.
Okay.
When we get to your cinematic bucket list, we'll hit those up for sure.
Yeah.
Kindergarten Cop. It's just
the most badass words. Kindergarten.
Right there,
The Eraser.
Junior.
That's right.
Mr. Mom.
Twins.
Twins.
Yeah. It's all right there.
All right. Well, before
he's not a Mr. Mom. What am I thinking?
No, that's Keaton. That's Michael Keaton.
That's the other
What's the one with him? And
he gets pregnant in Junior.
Junior is the one. Okay, Junior is the one I was thinking about.
I saw that in the theaters.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, Brad, just like before we get into kind of the history and the actual film itself, like compared to like what your problem, like external perception of what Predator was. Was it really that much different, or what did you say that it was like, it was definitely the kind of movie you had been sold all this time?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that like surprised me too much. God, I'm trying to think, like,
because you've seen other things with the Predator in it, I assume, at some time or another.
I mean, I've never seen either of the AVP movies.
Fortnite.
Wait, is
there been Predator video games?
Oh, the Predator's in Fortnite. He can do the gritty.
Oh, I knew that. I knew the Xenomorph was in there.
They're both.
I don't think I've seen any of the like core Predator stuff at all. But like, you know, like getting into it, I mean, like 20 minutes into it, I expected everybody but Schwarzenegger would die, stuff like that. You know, I was like
close.
Not like super surprised at the direction it went, but it's like, I think I was more, the thing that surprised me most was just how hard it goes.
Yeah.
Like I clocked it. Like the shot, like the edit, the cut to helicopter in the jungle, the mission is on, we're doing shit, is like barely 5 minutes into the movie. And like,
yep. Well, and you had seen like the Carl Weathers handshake thing. So with
if you want to say like, what are your top three? Holy shit. Oh, that's where that came from. Moments yeah. in this movie. All three of them are that shot.
Yeah, that like, shot's amazing.
Like I was like,
it still is.
Like I just had, it's like, fuck. I never even knew that was a photograph when I saw it on Twitter. I thought it was like painted or something. I had no idea what that was until I saw that shot.
Cast. The cast is like, insane. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carl Weathers, fucking Ventura.
I laughed out loud when I saw Jesse Ventura in the credits.
Isn't he perfect for this? He's perfect.
Oh, he's amazing.
I had no idea who was in this.
Bill Duke.
Also, he's in those behind the scenes interviews. Being real condescending toward the kind of military ability of all the other cast members.
Shocking. Mm-hmm. Did you now, Alex? You might have known from the behind the scenes or the director's commentary. Wasn't this the one where Schwarzenegger and Ventura had the like workout competition to see who could get up earlier?
And Carl Weathers is also it. You should watch these features. Carl Weathers is in there talking about like it's like. You get up at 5 a.m. and you want to go to the gym to get that pump, but you don't want any of the others to see you getting that pump.
But wouldn't you want to show up there like three apparently to like avoid like, them?
Yes, exactly.
I thought Ventura would get in there just a few minutes before they did and just like dump water on himself and be like 997, 998 to make it seem like he'd been doing it for 2 hours.
Schwarzenegger and Ventura had a like size of arm bet going.
Oh my god.
Like they bet a bottle of champagne.
They're the two that ended up as U.S. governors. Amazing, right?
They bet a bottle of champagne. Pain on who had the bigger biceps.
Didn't Billy? I think Billy ran for governor of like Tennessee as well, right?
Yeah.
What's it? Sonny Landham? Is that his name?
Sonny Landham. Like, yeah. So
Landham. There's something in there, and I don't want to talk too much about the behind the scenes stuff, but they said they had to hire a bodyguard to get him in the movie, but not to protect him, to protect everyone else from him.
Oh, is he
apparently
nuts?
Had a major problem starting fights with people, and that kind of kept. Like, you can kind of see that in where his political career went, because he was hardcore conservative to the point where, at some point during one of his various runs, he basically just started talking about exterminating Arab people. So he went real hard in the other direction from the more moderate politics of a Jesse Ventura or an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I guess picking fights is true to the character of Billy, though. You know, it's he picks a fight there on the bridge at the end.
Yeah, though also throughout most of the movie, he doesn't say hardly anything. He's supposed to be the quiet, stoic one, which doesn't seem like that was actually Sonny Landham's personality.
Not to watch those interviews. I mean, he talks shit for sure.
I believe it.
Anyway, I didn't mean to derail too much with behind the scenes stuff, but especially coming off all these submarine movies where all of those also start with some preamble before a mission that occupies 90% of the movie. You know, it's like. Comparing this to like Crimson Tide or like fucking Dutch Boat.
Yeah.
Like, again, they barely even pay lip service to why they need to go into the jungle. It's just, we need to get out there and start shooting things as fast as possible.
It is MacGuffin City. It is like, who cares?
And then like the ambush, the attack on the rebel or the insurgent base or whatever. I was just like, I see.
The C4 truck is like straight out of Mercenaries Playground of Destruction, where you just throw a C4 in, rolls a truck in, and blows it up.
That village attack is the most. I have got a bunch of G.I. Joe figures. How would you blow up a thing?
It was none of these guys are going to get a scratch coming out of this. They are literally going to gun down about 30 people each.
One of them got a scratch, and he said, I ain't got time to bleed.
That's right. Yes.
Son of a bitch is dug in like an Alabama tick.
You're hit. You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
There's just people bouncing off trampolines left and right, like flying across from each other. It is hot shots, but it's also hot shots. It is the parody of it.
But you know what? It's Commando, but it's better executed Commando. Because Commando, that end sequence, you can see the trampolines dudes are walking.
You see the
off
things
of, like,
flipping
them
up and everything. You see the same shot of the lighthouse exploding like 7 times. Like Predator is like competently made Commando. Yes, the beginning of Predator is good. End of Commando.
Like the editing in Predator is a little jumpy, but you can see like where they made the cuts are pretty smart, because it hides any of the stuntman shit, which Commando did not give a fuck about at all.
So if we're
also,
go ahead, Dan, because I kind of want to get into like the setup.
Oh, I was just gonna say, while we're talking about the shots, the one that they use several times that I really like is when the camera is like in the like deep brush and it's like moving backwards and you see them like walking at the camera with the brush parting and everything. Mm-hmm. They use that a few times and it looks awesome.
There's a particular shot of Arnold with that kind of framing that is like the shot of, I mean, it's the Contra cover. It's literally absolutely.
All right. So for anyone who is following along here, I'm going to give you the setup and I'm going to give you a little bit of history here while we so we can get into it. The setup obviously is this team, this rescue team, quote unquote. Let's be real. They're fucking stone cold murderers, but their job is to go in and rescue hostages in hostage situations. And they have been sent into unnamed Central American country filmed in Mexico to what they are told is rescue some people in a crashed helicopter. CIA operatives or whatever.
So the they're told cabinet minister and his aide originally.
And there's a behind enemy's lines and there's a not behind enemy lines.
It's across a border.
Okay. Yes, it's across a border. The base they start out on, I assume, is in some kind of Central American friendly territory. Operation Condor was going on during this time, which is why they chose to set the movie here. Like, the Central America was absolutely lousy with special forces units at this point because we were interfering a little bit in some politics, more than a little.
So they've got to go behind enemy lines to go rescue the cabinet minister, because if the cabinet minister is taken by the rebel forces, very bad things could happen, right? That's the setup? Yes.
That cabinet minister is very important to our scope of operations in this part of the world.
Dutch, the general's saying that a couple of our friends are about to get squeezed, and we can't let that happen. We need the best. That's why you're here.
Yeah,
yeah, they're essentially going into a country they should not be in, and that's why no reinforcements can follow them. That's why they can't get an evac from there. Like, they have to
the best of the best go in.
Right. Like, they have to get back into friendly territory before like they're basically being disavowed by the authorities, right? As long as they're across that line.
And at the base, they meet up with Carl Weathers, who is a former military, now CIA operative, who basically is friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger's Dutch, the leader of the team. And they get in there, they do their shit, they blow a whole lot of jungle up, and they realize that someone cooked up a story and threw him into a meat grinder because they weren't rescuing a cabinet minister.
Dude, like, to Dan's point about that first part of the movie being, like, extremely competent and good on its own, like, okay, they blow away that whole base, and then they find out Carl Weathers has kind of set them up, or he, like, sold them.
He lied to them.
He lied to them about why they were going in, because he needed them to go in, and they never would have done it if they knew the truth, which is that it's like a bunch of, it was like CIA operatives and there were like some Russian military advisors there.
Yeah.
And they're just like, there's all this mystery around like something very big was going to go down here.
This is goddamn true. Goddamn jackpot. This is more than we ever thought we'd get.
Yeah, we got those bastards. We got him.
I think this is what you're looking for.
You sales! It's all bullshit. All of it. The cabinet minister, the whole business. Got us in here to do your dirty work.
Look, we just stopped a major invasion. In 3 days, they'd have been across the border with this stuff.
Why us?
Because nobody else could have pulled it off. You pissed about the cover story. I knew I couldn't get you in here without it.
So what story did you hand to Hopper?
Look, we've been looking for this place for months. My men were in that chopper when it got hit. Hopper's orders were to go in and get my men, and he disappeared.
He didn't disappear. He was skinned alive.
And my orders were to get somebody in who could crack these bastards.
So he cooked up a story and dropped the six of us in a meat grinder.
What happened to you, Dylan? You used to be somebody I could trust.
I woke up. Why don't you? You're an asset. An expendable asset. And I used you to get the job done. Got it?
Yeah, but like, so Dylan didn't know about the Predator, right? He was surprised.
No.
They were just doing shady government shit.
Right, but that's
the only thing he knew was that another team, I'm going to say just a straight up death squad, had been sent in to rescue these people beforehand and had gone missing, and they did not tell Dutch or his team that.
Yeah, but so the point I was going to make is, like, even before the Predator stuff kicks off, I was super into the other movie they were already doing there. I was like, I want to know more about this military plot. Like, the fuck were these Russian military advisors doing here? Like, that's interesting, but...
Like, it's just detailed enough to keep you interested before you know that, like, there's an alien skinning people alive. But then they just completely dispense with that once they are done blowing up this place. And as they try to escape through the jungle, as the rebels are chasing after them, with their one hostage in tow, Anna, who is like the one woman in this extremely testosterone filled movie. And they immediately start getting picked off one by one by this unseen camouflaged force, which is a 7'3" dreadlocked alien with lasers and super knives.
Which I didn't remember that I in all my viewings of this, I do not remember that opening scene of him getting deposited on Earth from that spaceship.
Neither did John McTiernan, apparently.
Oh, okay.
In the commentary, he's like, I forgot we filmed this.
Yeah, I totally...
I forgot we did this. This was one of the last shots we did because it was in the script, but this was like all post-production. I forgot this was here.
Wait, just the ship like flying?
Just the ship
away?
Landing.
Yeah. It's like a little ship kind of flies by and drops a little pod.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if it'd be better with none of the space stuff. Originally, just
well, there was apparently a lot more of that in the original script.
Huh.
I was thinking that when I was watching Prey, because there are some like really clear shots of the ship and everything. And,
no
like,
spoilers.
I
still want to watch it.
No spoilers. I just kind of like the less is more approach of just like, we don't need, like, I hate it when movies need to over-explain stuff. Like, I love the first Highlander, but then the second one is like, now we need to explain where the Highlanders came from. It's like, no, we don't need, it's the Star Wars prequel thing. It's like, just give me the mystery, you know?
Especially for this first movie. I mean, granted, like, who doesn't know what Predator is these days, but like, when this came out, if you had made it all the way to like what 2/3 into the movie without having any idea at all where what this thing is or where it came from,
or what even really looks like,
right? As opposed to like, you know, you at least know like, oh, there's an alien going around.
Yeah. So, the original script for this, like, there was apparently more ship stuff. Like, there was the whole, and they ended up taking some of the stuff that they cut from this movie and putting it in Predator 2, which we'll get to later this month. But there is like inside the ship stuff that they like. John McTiernan was like, nah, this stuff, like, he literally uses the word, that stuff was yucky. I didn't like it. I don't want to do it. So, but yeah, that stuff found its way in later. Just a little bit of history here on the development and production of Predator. This is a first-time screenplay from writing brothers Jim and John Thomas. They went on to write Predator 2, Executive Decision, and the Will Smith Wild Wild West movie.
All right.
Excellent.
Of all things. They also have a lot of writing credits on everything else Predator, because they're just going to be credited on that shit for the rest of their lives. The premise for the movie was conceived based on a joke that was going around Hollywood after Rocky IV was made, which is that after Rocky IV, if they ever made a Rocky V, they would basically have to get a space alien to fight him, because there was no one left on Earth for it to face Rocky at this point. He's already beaten the Russian super soldier. Who's left?
And Tommy Morrison is the answer.
Yeah. And these guys were like, what if a big action hero did fight an alien, and wrote a script based on that? Apparently the original version of the movie was just Schwarzenegger's character primarily against the alien, and Schwarzenegger did not really like that. So they kind of did a bunch of rewriting on it where they added in the team of commandos and some of the other stuff. At least that's what Schwarzenegger says. And no one else seems to confirm that detail, but he says, like, no. Like, I insisted that, you know, there be rewrites.
I kind of love the power and interest that Schwarzenegger had in all of his movies, because obviously he carried so much weight that if he said something, it's like, well, it's like Hogan in WCW, right, Alex?
Yeah.
Where it's like he's got a certain amount of, like, creative control because his name carries that weight. And it seems like he had great instincts with this stuff.
Definitely. And, this is a great vehicle for him, but it's also for everyone else on the cast, too. Like, everyone kind of gets a moment in here at one time or another, including Shane Black, who is the writer of the first two Lethal Weapon movies, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, who plays, I forget the name of the guy. He's the one who dies first.
He's Hawkins, the guy that has the big book of big pussy jokes.
Yes.
He's the nerd. He's the glasses wearing nerd. Like a lot of these guys are very kind of...
Right. You either have...
Shade. Yes. Stereotypical types. He's the nerd.
You either have 30-inch biceps or a pair of glasses. That's the only two.
30-inch glasses. And Shane Black, as you can imagine, a lot of those jokes were just him. He was just kind of riffing at various points. John McTiernan specifically cast him because he wanted a writer on set. I guess they did not want to fly the Thomas brothers down there. So he was like, had Shane Black around in case they needed to riff on some dialogue or figure something out. So
he primarily known as a writer back then?
He almost exclusively is and was a writer in his career. He did not do a lot of acting.
I think aside from the whatever's going on between Mac and Jesse the Body, the relationship between Hawkins and Billy. Like, him trying to just make him
Make him laugh.
Yeah, I like that. That's probably my favorite interaction between the crew members.
Yeah.
Now, something I heard recently that I didn't realize is when he does make Billy laugh and Predator hears it, do you know where I'm going with this? Where it's like, okay, are they actually playing that audio at the end?
Yeah, I think that's...
That's so creepy and awesome.
I feel like it's not just the take that you hear, because he doesn't laugh for that long.
Right.
But there's like something, like, I never fully understood, is it an in vocal cord thing that he's doing, or is it a computer thing?
Did he record it? Yeah.
There's a goofy like Predator dossier thing on the Blu-ray that you can flip through that literally just goes through like a shoulder mounted plasma cannon and like arm control panel or whatever. But like the helmet part says like something like contains a recorder to enhance the Predator's already considerable mimicry skills.
Oh, okay.
So it's like when they put the microchip in Caster Troy or in Sean Archer's throat to sound like Caster Troy. Okay.
Perfect analogy. But yeah, I guess that's like part of the lore or whatever.
So it's both,
Is that those aliens can kind of mimic sounds somehow.
This is John McTiernan's first big studio film. He had made one other movie prior to this, which is a much smaller indie feature. This was the first big budget film he ever got to make, and obviously he would go on to make Die Hard and Hunt for Red October and a whole bunch of other things. So,
wasn't he involved with Last Action Hero as well? Wasn't he one of the 19 directors that touched that?
I think he was at some point attached to that, but I'm not sure for how long. But you know, he had a long career, and it was, we talked about during Hunt for Red October, he was also one of the people that got wrapped up in the Anthony Pelicano wiretapping scandal in Hollywood. He actually went to prison for a little while.
Who was it? I was watching a documentary. Who got involved? It wasn't Gary Shandling. Who was it? Him? The wiretapping
thing.
I was watching some HBO documentary or something, and that was the first I learned about the wiretapping scandal.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of Hollywood people that got like in this guy's black book at one point, but I think John McTiernan literally hired him to spy on someone.
Oh, wow.
Which kind of, if you listen to John McTiernan talk, he has that kind of Robert Evans-y kind of delivery of like a guy who talks like he knows everyone and is involved in everything in Hollywood, so it does not entirely surprise me that maybe he's also a little bit of a paranoid lunatic.
Holy crap, man. Yeah, I'm looking at the like... The Hollywood Reporter called McTiernan one of Hollywood's most, quote, despised people.
Jeez.
Holy shit.
I mean, he does that commentary track alone. Not sure if there's a reason for that, but...
Oh, man.
The Predator itself. Mm-hmm. The design of this thing went through some iterations. The first version of it was done by Richard Edlund, who's a pretty experienced visual effects guy.
Oh, shit. He is super heavily featured in that ILM documentary I keep talking about. Like, he was one of the main Star Wars effects guys on the first 10 years of ILM.
So they hated the design he came up with originally. Huh. It is described on the Wikipedia as a disproportionate, ungainly creature with large yellow eyes and a dog-like head. And the suit itself was not nearly agile enough for what the filmmakers were going for. So they went to Stan Winston, and he came up with the current iconic design of the Predator with the dreads and the mask and all that stuff. The mask itself was designed and added later because it required something like 8 or 9 people to do all the face animatronics on the mask.
Oh, the actual Predator face.
The actual Predator mandible.
Like organic face. Yeah.
So they gave him the helmet so that they only had to show his face at the very end.
Helmet's cool.
It's a good look.
Honestly, I think out of all the like practical effects, like iconic like movie alien creatures and stuff, I know the Xenomorph is awesome. I love it too. But I think my number one is this Predator design. Mm. It just looks so fucking
cool. Something that's more anthropomorphic, I think I prefer the Predator. But like as a pure animal design, I think the Xenomorph is just like one of the most terrifying creatures anyone's ever come up with.
Yeah.
McTiernan on the commentary is like, you're going to get one H.R. Giger per generation. We're not going to find another guy like Giger to make something equivalent. So let's just do our own thing.
Yeah, the Predator is like cool, but goofier than the Xenomorph. The Xenomorph is terrifying.
Yes.
The Xenomorph is like otherworldly in its horror to me. It's like the very distillation of fear kind of thing, like almost Cthulhu or like Lovecraftian.
Yeah. Predator is just kind of like a weird beefed up crab.
He's a 7'3" hunter. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much his thing.
That face looks amazing, and like I don't want to skip to the end of the movie too fast, but like first of all, if they only put the helmet on to like minimize the amount of animatronic work they had to do on the face, like that's a weird like falling backwards into a good dramatic reveal.
Because
it's fucking mind blowing that you only see what that thing looks like in the last like 5 minutes. Yeah.
There's also three phases of it. It's like, you know, him invisible, him with the helmet, and then him without. And they're all awesome.
It's shocking to me to hear they didn't just write it that way because like that's an amazing like slow reveal over the course of the movie, but. But also, like, that thing fucking articulates while, like, the dude in the suit is running around in it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like they only have, like, tight close-ups of the face when the jaws are splaying.
Yeah.
He's, like, full body shot, just like, let's fucking go while his, you know, it's, like, amazing that they could get that face to work like that while the dude is just walking around in that thing.
Yeah, there were a bunch of wires kind of running into the back of that dude's head, basically, when that stuff was on. And so, originally... The original Predator, the person they cast to play the Predator, was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What?
Mm-hmm.
He was on set for like 2 weeks.
What?
And they had him in an original version of the suit, and they realized two things. One, he's 5'9", and therefore not nearly imposing compared to Jesse the Body Ventura and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and God, he probably even Bill Duke. And second, he whined a bunch about how the suit was too hot and it was too heavy. He couldn't do splits or martial arts moves or anything. He couldn't fight in it. And they just realized at a certain point, this is not going to work. So they ended up recasting Kevin Peter Hall, who is 7'3", and had just come off playing Harry in Harry and the Hendersons to play the Predator. He also plays the Predator in Predator 2. And no one has anything but the nicest things to say about Kevin Peter Hall. They say he was a huge trooper. He never complained about the suit. They went out of their way to try and make it as comfortable for him. The director was like, we never missed a shot because he couldn't, you know, stay in the suit long enough or anything like that. So it was a Amazing. Real, like, they again, backed into a much better casting and a much better situation. Sorry, go ahead.
Just on the Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff, I was reading an interview on Predator that kind of went into this, and in the article, I don't know who, maybe it was Hollywood Reporter, I don't know who did the interview, but they're like, we are just going to, we have 12 different accounts of why Jean-Claude Van Damme was either fired, walked off, or had to leave. And so we could not find any one of the accounts that actually agree with each other. So we're just going to put every account we heard.
Yes, like an oral history style.
Yeah, in this article. And it was amazing because, and then they would put it in italics, the one where he was fired, right? And it would be like the one where a guy broke a leg, the stuntman broke a leg, you know, and it's like, then underneath it would be like, somebody would be like, nobody fucking broke a leg doing this. It's just amazing the 12 stories they had.
McTiernan says this like 5 times on the commentary. He's like, you know, no one was really injured on Predator. There was one injury. There was one guy. Stuntman blew out his knee, and it's the scene where Schwarzenegger is diving off the waterfall. Like, his stuntman, when he hit the waterfall, he apparently like tore a ligament in his knee.
I thought watching that, I was like, man, that's a long fall.
It's also a weird shot. There's something about the wide shot where he like they had the punch in or something. That shot looks bad, like where he's jumping off.
Some
the
of that stuff was second unit.
Okay, well, yeah,
so that's probably why.
Something weird about it. Anyway, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. This is the Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff. Seems like this weird Hollywood. Like mystery.
It's just such a bad casting anyway, because like it's not what the Predator is. And I understand some of that is defined by the actor they end up going with, but like he's not imposing. Like he's a nimble martial artist. He is not a guy that looks like he can go toe to toe with Schwarzenegger.
Right. There are pictures of him in the suit, right? Don't those exist?
Somewhere there are a few, like I think set photos of him wearing it, but there isn't a lot because he wasn't on set for more than 2 weeks.
Right.
The invisibility effect is the other kind of big special effect here. There's that in the heat vision. They tried original heat vision, like straight up like heat camera, and it was a spectacular failure because it was in the 90s the whole time they were in Mexico. So basically everyone just blended into the background. Mm. So they used some other kind of like infrared style heat vision that like got them the visuals they wanted. And then
I was thinking of that a lot recently, and I'm not going to go on a whole tangent here, but I had a snake in my basement, and I was trying to catch it, and I heard that, like, you put a heat lamp down, or you put, like, a heated blanket or something.
They do like heat.
That's the thing. And so in my head, I just watched Predator, and I was thinking, like, wait, is that how, like, reptiles actually see? Do they see actual Predator vision, and that's what they base the Predator on? But the answer is no. Is that correct?
No, they do not. Not like that.
That would have been cooler. But
way cooler.
But the other thing was the invisibility effect, which was achieved. Okay, so here, this is the full-on description of this. It was achieved by having someone wearing a bright red suit because it was the farthest opposite of the green of the jungle and the blue of the sky. And the size, it was a suit that was like, you know, Predator-sized. They originally tried this with a chimpanzee because they thought that like that would be more, it was a nimble creature, it could jump through the trees, it would look right. And according to McTiernan, when they tried it, it didn't work because the chimp just hid once it got up into the trees. Because according to him, it was so embarrassed to be in the suit.
I believe it.
There's a bunch of shots in the special features on the disc of that red suit. Like the actual shots from the movie before they keyed out the...
Yeah. Does it have the monkey shots?
No, not the monkey. But
that was all just done in pre-viz.
But it does.
Okay, I want to see the monkey cut.
It is a real goofy looking giant red padded suit.
Yeah, it's like a gymnast they hired to do some of the, like the tree swinging stuff. And so the red was removed with chroma key, and then that would just leave an empty area. And then they would repeat the take multiple times with the actor using a 30% wider lens each time, which is how they got the sort of like refractory thing. Because according to McTiernan, the first time they tried it without that, it just, you didn't look like anything. You couldn't see what, like, there was nothing to juxtapose against the background.
It's a good effect.
Yeah.
All of the effects in this movie hold up, from the practical
surprisingly well,
to,
even
like,
the rubber suit. Like, it looks weirdly good in this movie.
Yeah, I can't think of any effects that didn't hold up in this, really.
I want to just point out just quickly, if you chroma key it out, it does not leave a, you do not see the background. You just see, you know,
nothing, whatever's the layer behind it. Yeah.
Well, no, you just have,
no, you see nothing. There is nothing there.
There's nothing there. Just basically.
They would have had to fill in.
Yeah, that's what they do with other passes.
You wouldn't just see the jungle behind it.
Right.
All right. Well, we have somehow gotten 40 minutes into this podcast before we've actually talked that much about the movie. So we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we're just going to get into the meat slapping good time that is Predator. And we're back. All right. The movie. Let's talk about the movie, man. Predator.
The movie.
So where do you guys want to kick off? Because we kind of talked a little bit about the beginning, but if there's anything in there you'd like to touch on again, I'm more than happy to.
It's funny, at the beginning, you know, we talk about how much testosterone there is at the beginning. And I was watching with Bonk, and she turned to me and she goes, I think this is the only movie that makes me wish I was a man.
Interesting. Okay.
We're just, everyone's just being just so just it's, cool and
she has,
tough.
She has Predator envy is what you're saying?
I think she, yes, absolutely.
The thing that the part of this movie that is the just turned up to 15 for me is it's got to be the helicopter scene and when they're flying out there, where you just, that helicopter is running on testosterone at that point. There is no fuel in that thing.
All that's there is chaw and homophobic slurs. That's all that's going
just
on.
Just the one.
Yeah.
And Max weird thing about shaving constantly.
That's the part where I think where I just thought I was going to wake the kids up because I laughed so hard. I had forgotten of like, what other manly thing could we put in here? How about just a Bic razor against the skin, just like, shaving in a helicopter?
Like, that
there's
was
a grill
point.
In the helicopter. They're flipping burger.
Like, that was the point for me where I was like, oh, these guys are the best of the best, because this guy needs to look his best when he goes into the jungle and fuck shit up.
But if they were flipping burgers in, it would have been on somebody's thigh. It would have just been like, no grill. It would have just been like,
exactly,
the heat from my thigh flips his burger. And then he spits, what is it, Jesse's body spits his
onto Carl Weathers' boot.
It's just like, man, it is just
and
happening.
He smiles
there.
At him. He's just like, look at me, I'm spitting on you.
So dumb. It's so dumb. And then it's just meat. It's just beef in a helicopter.
I don't want to belabor this part too long because we do need to get into the rest of the movie, but I will just say, no martial arts film, no anything, no action, no nothing. Nothing in cinema is more authentic meat on meat slapping than that handshake between Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yes. That is the single greatest skin to skin contact anywhere in cinema.
It is. Yes. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I answer that this must be yes, but there are no bicep doubles in that, right? That has to just,
I don't
be
no way,
because
no
they get pretty tight in that
like,
shot.
Like I said, all those dudes were working out hard.
Yes. I guarantee you they worked out extra hard the day before that one was filmed.
Oh, who was it? I think it's Shane Black in those interviews where he's talking about how fucking much these guys exercised throughout the course of production, like hours a day. Like he was like they would get up and run for 90 minutes straight, go to the gym and pump iron, go shoot on set all day long, get back, go back to the gym, pump a bunch more iron, and then go to bed. That was their entire day.
Schwarzenegger's a world-class power lifter. I mean, that's part of his whole deal. He's got to keep doing
that. But that's the thing. Carl Weathers isn't. Jesse Ventura isn't.
He's jacked,
they
though.
Choose
Carl,
this
Carl
lifestyle.
Weathers is ripped in this movie.
Oh, he's so
also in all the Rockies, Carl Weathers is like always jacked.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, he's not a bodybuilder. He makes this choice to do this because he wants to, just because it's a profession.
It is beefy. It is.
Yeah. Imagine, it's like Gears of War, the tone of Gears of War in a movie, basically.
But
it,
pretty much. Yeah, it's weird. Like it's kind of all embodied in the cigar work right at the beginning, where he puts the cigar in his mouth and never takes it out, even as he's like jumping out of the helicopter. If you look, like, he puffs the cigar like nanoseconds after his feet touch down from jumping like 6 feet out of the helicopter. Like, He never stopped smoking this cigar.
Nor should he.
It seems like from some of the stuff I was reading, Schwarzenegger knew exactly what his character was supposed to be. Like, was like I think there was a quote that somebody said where he went up to the director and was like, I say four words here. I'll say three. Like, he knew exactly, mm-hmm. he knew what his role was. He was like perfectly in tune. I think he also got married during the middle of this.
Yes, and,
like,
he did. He flew off to Hyannis Port at one point to go get married, had a 3-day honeymoon, then came back to Mexico to keep filming.
Like,
was this to Maria Shriver at the time?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
So the stuff I was reading was said he was great on set. He was a professional, but knew exactly what the role was and like what all the beef was supposed to be in the movie, which is like, you know, just muscle. It's muscle.
Him and Carl Weathers, I think at this point, were by far the most experienced actors on this set. Like, Bill Duke had been in some films at this point. Jesse Ventura hadn't really done anything at this point other than Running Man.
Was Running Man
Running Man was
this?
Right before this, I
so,
think.
So Jesse and Arnold had worked together before.
Yeah.
And Duke and Arnold had worked together in Commando. So
yeah, and Shane Black wasn't really an actor. Like, he was primarily a writer, but, you know, he got cast in this. And Billy. And Sonny Landham, I think, had done a little bit of stuff prior to this, but not a lot. But they I think Carl Weathers and Schwarzenegger had the most movies under their belt at this point. And then, yes, we get to them. You know, there's some great stuff of them going through the jungle. Bill Duke has an all-timer of a fucking line when Carl Weathers starts lagging behind and accidentally trips and falls in the leaves and then pulls him up and is just like, "You're ghosting us, motherfucker. Make another noise and I'll bleed you real quiet."
"You're ghosting us, motherfucker. I don't care who you are back in the world. You give up position one more time, I'll bleed you real quiet. Leave you here. Got that?"
Is this when he takes the scorpion off his shoulder?
No, that's
knife?
Later. Oh, that okay. Later. That's any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Anytime. There are some quotes in this movie.
I love
stick around, of course.
Yeah.
Stick around.
Bill Duke might actually be one of my all-time favorite character actors. I've never not loved that guy in something.
He definitely does some hardcore acting in this, especially after Jesse Ventura bites it.
Man. Mm-hmm. Oh, so we never, in the Predator universe, we have not gotten the a prequel movie of what happens. Is it Harper or the other team
Hooper.
That's there? Hooper?
Jim Hopper. No.
Hopper?
Oh, is
yeah.
it Hopper?
I don't know, because it's Schwarzenegger who says it every time. So it's like, Hopper, Hopper.
So we have never gotten that tale of like what happened to that crew, or was
I bet there's like an Image comic somewhere that is about that.
Okay,
but like,
I'm amazed
that movie.
At no point, you know, for as much as Hollywood kind of regurgitates stuff and loves to bring people back, like Arnold came back for several bad Terminator movies.
Yes.
The fact that like Arnold was one and done, like there are like a bunch of Predator movies. There's no cameos. I haven't seen the two most recent ones. So
have you seen two? Because I think there is a brief videotape thing of him in two somewhere.
So, I haven't seen two since I was like 12 years old.
Okay.
Which one did Robert Rodriguez work on?
Predators and The Predator. I never saw either of those.
Rodriguez produced Predators, I think, which is the third one. Nimrod Antal is the director of that one.
Oh, yes. So they talked to them both, and they thought they were going to get Arnold for that one for a while.
I'm glad they didn't. Yeah. You know, keep it pure.
I'm going to say that it was Adrian Brody was an interesting cast for choice for, you know, their mercenary in that movie. But I think Predators is better than people give it credit for. It's not a bad movie at all. But the action in this one, like, is far and away better than just about any other Predator movie. And especially this scene in the Rebel base where they just fucking tear ass through this thing. And we get to meet Painless, which is what they call the minigun.
Yeah, old Painless, I think.
Old Painless. So this gun was a thing that was designed to be mounted in a helicopter. This was not supposed to be a handheld weapon. And apparently in every single weapons test they did, it ran through the entirety of its ammo in about 5 seconds, even when they modified it to run at quarter speed.
So wait, it was a function, obviously not live ammo, but it was not a replica thing. It was, they took this thing and modified it from
a helicopter.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And apparently, like, Jesse Ventura apparently got pretty good at swinging it around and carrying it, but, like, most of the scenes where he's carrying it, it has no ammo, because otherwise there's, like, you would not be able to carry it, like, reasonably.
It is such a dumb scene.
So much stuff explodes.
It goes
Everything
on
explodes.
So long. It is parody levels of long. It is.
And you get, like, two Arnold one-liners in here.
Oh, right. Stick around.
Stick around.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Knock, knock.
Right. Oh, also, one of my notes here was everybody has the giant knife. Everybody's got a knife that is at least 6 feet long. Like, it is
the
so
giant
big.
Knife has a story.
Oh, okay, really?
According to McTiernan, there's a story. The story is that some, like, boutique knife maker was trying to pitch a bunch of Hollywood studios on using their stuff, and McTiernan thought it kind of sucked, but he was like, I'll tell you what, if you can get me something like a machete, because that's what they'd use in the jungle, maybe we'll use it. And so they came up with this knife, which is like this, you know, foot and a half long combat knife. He said it was a shitty machete. Did not actually work very well as a machete, but it looked great. But they also had to come up with a reason for Arnold not to be carrying that the entire movie, which is where Stick Around came from. Okay. They're like, we need to get rid of this thing, so let's do a bit with it.
Because Billy also has a gigantic foot and a half a knife. I feel like they're all, it's ridiculous. The everything is just beefed up in this movie. And that scene, I was definitely giggling at how long it was going and couldn't tell if I was supposed to be laughing or amazed at the military might of this whole thing. Like, our audience supposed to be like, wow, these guys are really good.
I mean, honestly, I was not even finding it funny at all. I was just like, this kicks ass. Like, I wasn't seeing any irony or humor in it. I was just like, this is fucking sweet.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. I would not have expected anything different from you.
It's awesome.
I mean, look, there are two movies I use to calibrate new speaker systems in my home. the bank heist scene from Heat and this scene. Those are the two bits I always cut to make sure that my speakers sound right.
I use Heat.
So they run roughshod over these half-assed mountain boys and then have to hightail it out of there with Carl Weathers bringing his one hostage with him because she knows their operations. And then we can basically just forget about
the plot.
Any of that stuff for the rest of the movie because none of it matters anymore.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, because as they are working their way through the jungle, at one point Hawkins and Anna get separated. And we have our first murder as the jungle comes alive and takes Hawkins.
It's a pretty good one. That's a wrist blade one. I tried to write down all the kills here as they happen.
How they died.
Yeah, because I think Predator's kind of, for a hunter, is kind of lame because, you know, using all this. Wrist blade kill, though, totally legit. I think shoulder cannon kills, totally lame.
What? Like,
overkill.
They've got miniguns and stuff.
This guy's got, we'll get to it when they start happening, but like, wrist blade, legitimate, takes him, the jungle takes him. Also, I looked up to be like, well, what is she, because she says in Spanish, she's going, and who is translating? It's Pancho? Is that
Pancho.
The
Chavez.
Yeah, Pancho is translating, and he's like, she says the jungle came alive and it just took him. And then Dylan, Carl Weathers, like, that ain't what she said. What she said can't, it makes no sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
So I looked it up, and it's like pretty much exactly what she said. And the person writing the thing was like, Dylan's just an asshole who always wants to be right. And I was like, all right, I'll take that.
I think there was definitely also an element of him being in denial.
Sure.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, like he starts sounding increasingly desperate as he says, like, because they start saying there's something out there and it's not human, and he just keeps like, no, wait, what the fuck are you talking about? It's just
it's two a couple or three guys
tops.
Yeah,
we got to take him down. Like, he seems like he's starting to freak out.
He's a little panicky.
Well, you know, he's ex-military, but now he's in a CIA desk job, and they didn't want him on this mission anyway. And he's already kind of in an adversarial place. And I guess as that character was originally written, he was just a straight up villain. Like he was just a fucking scheming piece of shit. And McTiernan was like, no, I want a redemption arc for this guy. I want there to be some history here. I want something more for this character than just to him being an annoying antagonist the whole time.
Redemption arc.
Well, he kind of gets it. I mean, look, he finally understands that like he has brought them into a situation that they absolutely cannot easily get out of.
He goes out valiantly. At least.
Yes. As valiantly as he can.
He goes out better than Mac. Poor Mac.
Hawkins, for that matter.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Hawkins really, really eats a lot of shit in this one. And, like, all you see, one, is just the entrails in the fucking, in the grass. And two, his dangling ass body, which apparently no one thought to look up, even though they found a bunch of bodies skinned earlier.
No.
Yeah, they never found it.
Yeah.
Hawkins.
I think it's Anna, when she's talking here, that refers to it as, like, the demon who makes trophies of men.
That's later on.
Really,
yeah.
Oh, that's she later. That's a really
English
cool nickname.
Reveals that, yes, I know English, you dumb assholes.
Yeah.
And also reveals that, like, her people know of this thing, because apparently this has been happening for a while.
Right, it's like a tradition, like a folklore.
On the hottest summers.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And it's hot. Oh, it's
in
hot.
In the summer, it grows hot.
When I was little, we found a man. He looked like butchered. The old woman in the village crossed themselves and whispered crazy things, strange things. El diablo cazador de hombres. Only in the hottest years this happens. And this year it grows hot. We begin finding our man. We found them sometimes without their skin, and sometimes much, much worse. El que hace trofeos de los hombres means the demon who makes trophies of man.
And there's, let's see. I don't know. There's a good build up to that first kill because they have found those skinless bodies, and those things are genuinely disgusting.
And there's that long stretch where Billy is just kind of staring off into the jungle.
That's the other thing, yeah, is that they really go hard on establishing Billy as like the guy who's in touch with the jungle mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And like the guy they all look to for like instinct about yes. what's going on.
And, you know, the native tracker thing is a little bit of yeah. a trope, but,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's kind of what I meant.
They give it a little more than just the stereotype, but yeah.
They don't lean on, like explicitly being like, use your native senses to, you know,
right.
track anything.
He's so not listening to the ground for horses
yeah,
or anything
it's
like
not
that.
It's not quite that yeah. cliched.
But, I mean, no listen, there's a point, though, where it doesn't break it, but... You know, they always do the reverse shot of the predator looking out at them every time they're staring into the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, yeah, exactly. And there's a part where Billy and Arnold or Dutch are staring and Billy's like, it's in the trees. It's right there. But later on, they just see the predator in full camo. Like the camo.
It takes them a while, though, before they can kind yeah. of identify it.
Okay.
Isn't it Mac that's pointing it out to Dylan?
Yeah.
Like, it's in the trees
yeah,
right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. And you can kind yeah. of see like the warbly, you know, outline. I guess they couldn't see it at that point. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, it even takes Carl Weathers a minute to actually see what Bill Duke is pointing out.
He
like,
never
it,
sees
he doesn't
it.
See it right away.
He never sees it. He just says he sees it. He just,
yeah. It's like an Emperor's New Clothes thing. Oh, yeah. No, I
oh,
see the jungle predator.
Oh, I definitely
absolutely.
See it. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. He's definitely out there. Let me sneak around. God damn it. How come he sees it? I don't see it.
Hawkins dies, yeah. and then not too long after that, we lose Jesse the Body Ventura.
Come on in, you fuckers. Come on in. Old Painless is waiting.
I was kind of, I mean, on the one hand, I was shocked they killed him off that fast. But on the other hand, if you really want to establish that the stakes are through the roof,
mm-hmm.
killing off the second biggest beefcake after Arnold right away was like, oh, shit.
I think Ventura might actually be a little bit bigger in stature
I think
than
so.
Arnold.
Yeah, that's, a little bigger in terms of mass. Yeah,
you're Schwarzenegger tell it he won the bottle of champagne, but
okay. I bet every single one of them, if pressed, would say they won the bottle of champagne.
I feel like Jesse the Body is the bigger meathead in this movie, though. Like,
for
plays,
sure.
plays
Definitely.
The bigger, like, yeah. you know.
But he's.
I bet Arnold could lift more. I bet Jesse had more mass.
Right. But yeah. but he's definitely up there in terms of, like, just thick dudes
yeah.
who will kick ass here. It's like.
It's carrying
the biggest gun.
Yeah.
If they're, mm-hmm. if they're killing off the heavy this fast, then things are really fucked.
Yeah. And, you know, he takes a couple of laser blasts to the chest, and Bill Duke is not happy about it and just starts firing all higgledy-piggledy into the jungle. And then everyone's like, oh, I guess we should do that, too.
Thank you.
everyone.
That's like some unintentional comedy.
I think it's a little intentional.
It's everyone just tearing the farce. I mean, and like, I think like you said, Brad, you expect them to come and be like, whoa. And they just come and are like, I'll get in on this. What are we shooting at? Don't know. Good. And what is he, Bill Duke is like, nothing could survive that. Nothing. Bill Duke has a lot of whisper lines in this. He's also so emotionally upset about Blaine.
Is he meant to be losing it a little bit? Because like he gets especially
like
that
when
time,
he's singing Long Tall Sally and taking all his shit off. Like he's like losing it by that.
Or even before that, the part where he's got this like soliloquy looking up at the moon.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
he cuts himself shaving and breaks the thing up. Like he's definitely losing it as the movie goes on. Yeah.
Well, and the thing they're emphasizing here is that like Blaine was basically his one friend and they had been through so much shit together, you know, talking about like jungles of Cambodia, like all these other probably very illegal missions they were on. And, you know, when you go through something like that and you have a friend, I can understand where that emotional attachment gets wrapped up. And also like just the pure dire circumstances they're in where they're being hunted by a thing they can't even identify. Yeah, he snaps.
What does he say? He was a good soldier. He was a good warrior.
He was my friend.
Mac. He was a good soldier.
He was my friend.
He was my friend.
He snaps. He's gone bye-bye for. I mean, he sets up a lot of traps. And these guys are probably very good at what they do, hanging bodies in the trees, a lot of tree work happening. Billy says he's in the trees. They set up a lot of traps on the ground. It takes them a very long time before Schwarzenegger has to explicitly say, oh, it's using the trees. Like, yeah, okay, man, like that should have been...
But
maybe a little clearer.
Climbing those trees is probably pretty hard.
They don't know what they're up against, you know?
Yeah, and they don't know that it can stay exclusively in the trees.
No. So all their traps don't do anything except, man, Bill Duke kills the shit out of some giant bear boar.
Or something. Yeah, that is, I mean, I thought that was, like, genuinely pretty chilling, though. Yeah. Like, the boar part is, like, kind of goofy, but then the part right after that where they're like, wait. While this was going on, it snuck through all our traps and took this body. Jesse Ventura's body and slipped back out, and we didn't even know it.
Why did it want the body? That's like,
That's fucked up. That's genuine. It's like that's worse than just killing people. It's like it came back for the corpse. Like what the fuck?
And Max,
and that's the moment when
canteen.
I think they realize.
And Max, little liquor thing.
That's the moment when they realize they are straight up being hunted. It is not just about like, you know, it's not again some half-assed mountain boys trying to kill him. It is like it is straight up they are coming for them specifically. And
who is it that has the line? Is it Billy that has the line, or somebody just says like it's picking us off one by one, like a hunter? And then like you see like Dutch's eyes just go.
Yeah,
it's like he has the epiphany of what's going on.
Yeah,
Billy is also the one who says we're all going to die.
Part, man. Like so, like as much as he was like that whole thing is kind of cliched about he's the one with the good instincts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like that moment when he says I'm scared. And then he's like, there's something out there and it ain't no man.
Oh,
we're all
right.
Gonna
die. Lost, yeah. Yeah, he's all going hope
to,
for this whole
we're
thing.
We're all going to die.
You're not scared of anything.
Yeah. No, you're scared. You ain't scared of no man. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, there's something out there waiting for us and it ain't no man. And then he literally just says, we're all going to die. And he just walks off.
Billy, you know something. What is it?
I'm scared, Pancho.
Bullshit. You ain't afraid of no man.
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man. We're all gonna die.
It has much more weight when it has that drawl behind it.
Yeah.
We all gonna die.
Yeah, so I think Blaine gets a cheap shoulder cannon kill. That's one cheap one for the Predator. Distance kill. He's got the targeting computer.
They have guns.
It's a cheap
one. It's fair. There's a handicap match. There's fucking eight of them against
he's
one.
He's camoed, man. A shot from the camo, that's just cheap.
Yeah, but also, I mean, but having his entire torso hollowed out, I feel like, is like a pretty... over the top way to go.
Yeah. He gets a glancing blow, spray. and then I think it blows out the rib cage. Yeah,
well, Benny, they're wearing camo, so I mean, by your logic, that's illegal too.
It's it's active camo, and then there's that whole.
You think Kojima saw this movie?
Oh, for
between active
sure,
camo and the fear and Snake Eater and every other thing.
Yeah. Much like I came out of Crimson Tide, going, how many fucking times has Kojima seen Crimson Tide?
Yeah,
same thing here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's next?
So they lay their traps. That doesn't work. They steal the body. They kill a rubber pig. And then they try it again with more traps during the daytime. And so, that's when they set up the net.
Oh, right. The log.
Other stuff.
Yeah, I think real quick before you get too deep, there's one important detail we have glossed over after the, ridiculous, bombardment of the jungle with everybody's guns. They find its blood.
Oh, that's right.
They see the glowing green blood, and then that's where I think that's probably the best actual catchphrase of the movie.
There's two really good blood related one liners in this movie.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
That blood, by the way, is just straight up glow sticks. They just cracked open a bunch of glow sticks.
It works.
Nickelodeon gack.
It works. Yep. Looks good. It's a terrible.
They did a little rotoscoping on some of it to make it glow more, but yeah.
It's not a great thing for a hunter to have glowing blood, but listen, he makes it, Predator makes it work.
It kind seems to work out okay for them, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah. So they had set up all their traps. I think that's when
Schwarzenegger becomes bait. He just kind of sort of wandering out there trying to see if he can tempt it into walking into the net, and eventually it does.
Is this around the time that it's doing surgery with his little gun that comes out of his leg?
That's when that's when we discovered
that's before. I've got it in front of me right now. That's a little bit before. And they hear a roar.
Is it the Rambo thing? He's not putting gunpowder in there. He does something.
He shoots himself in the arm, and then he puts that clamp on the wound on his leg.
Right, right.
I think he was trying to extract a bullet too or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who got him?
I don't think it's really.
It could have been anyone.
I think it's just
there were a lot of bullets fired.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man. This is when, with all the trap stuff too. After he's in the net and kind of escapes the net, is that where Pancho takes a log to the chest?
Yes, he takes a big old log to the chest. He gets busted up inside. I'm gonna say that's probably all your ribs broken.
Yeah, that looks pretty rough.
And that's where Bill Duke just takes off and is just like, "I'm gonna have me some fun. I'm gonna have me some fun."
Montel Sally, she's Bill Sweet. She got everything and back to John needs. Oh, baby. Baby. I'm gonna have me some fun. 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 I'm gonna have me some fun.
Fucking Dylan chases after him. I have to go have my redemptive moment now, so I'm gonna go get him.
It's weird too, because they're having this conversation where at some point Mac's like, I need this. I need to have my revenge, which is totally earned. And he wants to grab it. And then Dylan again is just like, yeah, me too. I need to have my revenge too. And it's like, dude, you set us all up here. This is all your fault.
Point.
Yeah, but
that's
then you don't get to have your revenge. You are the revenge.
He has to make it right.
He
needs to save Mac. He wants to bring him back.
Yeah. Well, poor Mac. Poor Mac gets it the worst out of anybody in this movie. He's got all this revenge built up. He's hiding in a log. Just got his face blown out.
Well, Mac, it shows the shot from behind his head, which looks like Watermelon Gallagher just completely gone. But then there is a point where it's like, isn't he looking up and his whole face is intact and he gets shot? And I was like, I thought his head was gone.
Yeah.
Well, the back of his head is gone. I think what it is. Look, I'm not saying what the mechanics of these lasers are because I have no fucking idea. But my guess is that it's a small hole in and a giant hole out.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah.
Excellent.
Like a bullet,
So yeah, he gets the triple targeting beam on the face and just gets his face blown out. Again, cheap kill by the Predator, I think.
But he makes up with Dylan.
I don't know if I totally agree, because he thinks he's creeping up on the Predator because they catch it. Mm-hmm. They catch it chilling in the trees.
Yeah,
and they're like, okay, you work your way down there, and I'll flush him out the other way.
Yeah,
and I feel like that is the Predator getting one over on them, right? Because oh, the hunter became the hunted or whatever. But then
he,
like,
self-defense at that point.
He double hunters them. You know what I mean?
It's
they thought they had him and he outsmarted them a second layer on top of
I'm not saying the Predator's not a good hunter, but I think take out Mac with a wrist blade face to face, you know, not from a tree with your camo on and a shoulder mounted cannon.
No disrespect to Bill Duke, to Mac, whatever. He's not the one that the Predator really wants.
No, he wants Dylan's arm.
Well, he wants Dylan, but I think the one he really wants is Schwarzenegger, obviously. But, you know, he gets Dylan. Dylan so, tries. Yeah.
Dylan's got maybe one of the best deaths in the whole thing.
It's like a good last stand, but also I feel like they really are kind of just punking him here because, like, there's a big buildup to, like he straight up, like, raises his gun in slow motion like it's about to be this epic confrontation. Literally just shoots his arm off before anything even happens. And then the arm is laying there twitching and shooting.
Yeah. That bit always killed me in Arrested Development when they introduced Carl Weathers and the way they introduced, like, Ron Howard's like, he was an actor, and it cuts to him getting his arm shot off and his arm on the ground.
It's an iconic moment.
But he pulls another gun out with his other arm, doesn't he? And starts shooting back.
He does.
But then he barely does anything with that either before he
gets it right in the gut.
Yeah. Yeah,
but at least he dies on his feet, you know.
But he dies. Yeah, he dies with wrist blades.
So at that point, it is Dutch Poncho who is like mortally wounded and can barely walk.
Billy and Anna.
Billy and Anna, and this is the part where. See, I think Billy is the one who has done the dirtiest in this movie by not even getting to die on screen.
Film wise, because
he, like, they cross this log and then he just turns around in the middle of the log over this canyon. Throws his gun in the river, rips his shirt and his dog tags off, and pulls his knife out.
Yeah,
he's cutting his chest,
slashes himself all the way across the torso.
Why not?
Like, I feel like he should have gotten a big on screen. Like, I mean, I guess they don't want to give too much of the Predator away at this stage of the movie.
That's pretty badass, though.
Yeah, and they're building up to a big confrontation coming later. So another one of those I feel like might have been redundant.
I guess so. But then all you get is like one shot of him overhead in the heat vision, and then you hear him scream.
And it's a hell of a scream.
It is. But then he's just gone. I feel like all that build up on the log deserves a little more.
Well, two things. You get one more shot of Billy. Getting his skull ripped out.
He's just sleeping, Finny. Yeah, he's just having a nap.
A little full Sub-Zero fatality.
His eyes open in the moonlight on a tree, having his skull ripped out.
And then the other thing is, let's just assume because this Predator is a coward, he shot him with a shoulder cannon from like 40 miles away.
I bet Billy, you know, standing there mano a mano. Uh-huh. I bet they at least had a 3-second knife fight.
I'll give it to you for Billy's sake.
He had time to scream.
Maybe he got it, you know, maybe he got his leg blown out from the shoulder cannon, but yeah, he takes the skull, which I assume is a sign of Predator respect, and he does his like he blows all the blood off, the goo off, and he's gonna keep that one. That's a Billy's skull is a keeper. Think about the guys,
like when I clean my amiibos once they get a little too dusty,
just like that. That I assume the skulls he keeps are the ones he respects the most. So
yeah, and that's the thing is this is the one time you kind of get to see the actual like hunter trophy thing where he's like cleaning this blood off the skull, like, you know, sandblasting it, whatever it is, and he's like fingering his skull collection. Like it's very like, okay, are the Predators just nerds
a little bit?
Like, are they basically like, are we Funko Pops to them?
A little bit.
I think they're more like soccer trophies.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. It's like, look what I did.
I think
like
they might be nerds.
Like karate trophies.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a vibe, and then it's, you know, look, they're made out to be these giant badass hunters and whatever. But like the further they get into the Predator lore, it kind of just seems like they're big time nerds that just are a little too strict with their rules.
Yeah. Could be.
The rules are cool though, where it's like they don't want to just kill stuff. They want to kill stuff that is like cool to kill in terms of like it's an actual like challenge for them, you know.
They want
to
fuel their ego by saying I killed something cool.
It's not just like bloodlust.
I feel like kind of like Dan, you were saying earlier about explaining a lot of it. I think in Predator 2 you get a little more of the Predator lore. In this you kind of Yeah, you kind of just have to assume a lot by what's going on here. It doesn't really go into it.
I think the only thing you can really, and like I think a lot of the scenes before the big reveal of the character where they don't show it from more than like the waist up, but you see his hands doing stuff or like the stuff's really creepy. Like you definitely get that it like fetishizes its kills, right?
Yeah.
Like with the stroking of the skulls and stuff, but like it's
rubber
hands. So I think you get like some sense of its character.
It's at this point after Billy. What happens?
Poncho gets killed.
What happens to Poncho?
Oh, like just shot through the head.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just takes one to the side of the face. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty. That's
and
a pretty tough
Anna's
way to
go. About to grab a gun, but then Schwarzenegger in another iconic line here, like, no!
Right.
Run, get to the chopper!
There's a couple that get to the choppers, but yes, that is definitely the
that one. Is the one, though, right there.
No! Chopper!
Yeah,
and she does. She runs off because she's you know gonna go find the chopper, and Schwarzenegger is going to go, I guess, be the decoy so she can get away.
He comes up with some. I mean, I guess it's right. Like he only attacks people who are armed, so he hasn't killed you because you weren't.
It's no
armed.
Sport.
Yeah,
otherwise.
I guess.
Where do we learn that in this movie that he won't attack? And
they just infer it from what's going on because Poncho was laying there after the log thing, like. Easily,
right.
He could have easily picked him off if he wanted to, and he just didn't. Okay. I think he's literally like, "Why didn't he kill me?" or something.
And he does kill him when he's holding a gun. Okay. So
that makes sense. Yeah.
But so you know,
now we get to the movie. Yeah.
Now we're getting to this back third here.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger getting chased by the Predator goes flying off a goddamn waterfall.
Yeah.
Or a stuntman does.
Oh no.
and then finds his way into apparently some very stinky mud. I'm told that this was very unpleasant mud to be in. And Schwarzenegger did not complain, and it was very cold, and that's good because apparently this mud blinds them to your body heat.
All
which
the heat vision. That makes sense.
All the heat, even your eyeballs, everything.
Even your eyeballs. That's the part I have a little trouble with.
Everything. Also, it works for even once it's dried off and just caked on your skin at that point, and just you're just dirty now.
Have you ever done a mud
covering
mask?
The hot parts of your body? You can't see it.
Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, suspension. It's the parts where the mud no longer looks wet, where he's just like completely bone dry, and like this is still working for me. I'm good with this.
But this is also where we get our first real good shot of the Predator, like stalking out of the water, like his camouflage is kind of glitching out.
He
so
did not realize
for a bit.
He did not go for the waterproof option. On the camo, first time with water, you know.
Yeah.
You also see a human spine hanging on his back.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
It's a good look. Man. Yeah, like again for a big old rubber suit, which apparently they had to jury rig some kind of like bungee system so that 7'3" Kevin Peter Hall could actually kind of move in it. Like when he's rocking around on like the wet rocks and stuff, like there's no way he could have done that without something on his back to basically keep him upright. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great shot. And, you know, Arnold realizes, wait, I can camouflage. Yeah. I can hunt the hunter.
Yeah. And then a very long borderline indulgent training montage of making traps and shit.
Oh, not
zero dialogue.
It crosses
no dialogue.
The border like they do.
It's in enemy territory for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like full on, like just shot of him looking all grim, like rubbing mud under his eyes.
I mean, there's the fucking shot where he lights the torch and screams.
Oh my god,
like,
dude!
With the Predator like heating his blades, and I'm just like, let's fucking go. This
I was
is
like
incredible.
Laughing out loud at that scream.
I was grinning ear to ear at that part.
Yeah, it is now down to the Battle of the Titans. It is, you know.
Yeah, and it's a great battle, honestly. Like the build up to it, where you know, like Arnold is sort of like flush against the log, while the you know the camo comes down behind him and is sort of like creeping along behind him, and then he launches that first volley, and like all the fucking explosions,
sparks, and pyrotechnics, and.
And when they finally, you know, that works for a little bit, but eventually, you know, the Predator does kind of knock him back on his ass. And that's when we get the big reveal, the fingers and pulling the helmet off.
Oh, the tubes with the gas and everything coming out.
And at this
takes
point,
the Cyrax mask.
Yep, the Predator is just like, all right, motherfucker, you want to go? Let's go.
And their vision.
And they go.
And their vision, yeah. Predator vision, is even worse than with the yeah. thermal thing.
It's all heat.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, just full on hand to hand. I mean, at this point, it makes it clear there is actually no contest whatsoever. Like, he beats the living shit out of Arnold, and like, yeah. clearly, if he didn't stumble into a solution at the end, which was maybe a little underwhelming for me, he was fucked.
He was yeah, he was
he
gone.
Was super fucked.
I mean, the hand to hand here is pretty light because again, Kevin Peter Hall could not move in the suit super well. This kind of has the mechanics, Dan, you'll understand what I'm talking about here, of like a giant Gonzalez match. Like, it is literally just big overhands mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of just like double axe handles and stuff. There's really not room for any like significant combat here.
It's but Taker versus Gonzalez at Mania 9. Yeah.
yeah, but I feel like they wring a decent amount of tension out of it. And I'm with you, Brad. I do think the end of this fight is like a little underwhelming, but it is kind of a good cathartic moment when he just straight up Wile E. Coyotes.
Oh, totally. Like,
with the log.
Like seeing his body completely broken is very satisfying. The part where he almost caught him in one trap and yeah. then the Predator notices and is like, fuck your trap, and walks around the other way and then just happens to end up in under another trap. Like, I don't know. I was hoping for something a little more clever.
Mm. Is it he just happens to, or was Arnold that thorough?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. He gets squished by a giant log. And then also pushes the log off him. He's tough. That Predator's yep. tough.
What the hell are you?
Yeah, that's.
He's... What the hell are you?
Part is so weird.
It's like the closest you get to communication with this creature.
Also, the one part of sympathy I have for the Predator is when he's bleeding his glow-in-the-dark ooze out of his mouth, and he goes to spit, just spits it back on his face, which is like just like a little spurt comes out of the mask and spits right back on his face. I'm like, oh, your mouth isn't really made for spitting either. This whole...
Especially not in this kind of gravity yeah. where it's just going straight up, yes.
This whole thing is terrible. And then he's got his little, his sweet calculator watch.
Yeah, which has apparently a miniature nuclear device in it.
I never realized since I played Mortal Kombat 3 before I saw this full movie, I never realized that Cyrax fatality where he like pulls out a thing, types it in, and goes rah, 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 and then blows
you
up.
You never realized
it's a totally
that?
Predator thing.
Oh my god, yeah, that's like the most obvious like fucking thing in the world.
I hadn't seen Predator at the time.
I enjoyed the little nod to like Arnold or Dutch is like the best of the best of the best, that even this like alien technology he still immediately recognizes as a countdown for an explosive device.
Mm-hmm. We guys laughing maniacally.
And it. Also that.
Yeah. What else are you going to laugh about?
It is a truly unnerving laugh. Yeah. Like, it's actually scarier than some of the actual gore in this movie.
Like,
but it's well delivered and it's a good moment. I mean, the explosion is very rotoscoped, I will say. But it is a good, weird, otherworldly kind of looking explosion.
The thing that is like, so the Predator must, even though he might be mimicking Billy's laugh, he feels it. It looks like he's enjoying it.
He must have some understanding of what that is supposed
to
represent.
Yeah, because he is laughing. It is kind of like, what was that Star Trek episode where the baby's laughing?
Oh, yeah, Carbamite Maneuver with Clint Howard.
Yeah, where Clint Howard baby is just laughing maniacally. It is
a cartoon laugh.
It
absolutely.
Is weird. Yeah, he blows himself up, and then the clap your hands, and we're on a chopper.
And the chopper pilot, by the way, that's Kevin Peter Hall. That is the Predator.
Oh.
Okay. They gave him one scene outside of the suit.
Also, one of my favorite things that they don't do enough in movies is the credits, where it's like you show the person the name, and it's like them turning around and like smiling or like holding a gun. You know,
oh yeah,
like Carl Weathers.
But it wasn't.
Tiernan was straight up like, I don't want this to end on a dour note. I want a curtain call for these guys. Mm-hmm. So I want to have a moment where they're all smiling and looking happy.
But this is not even shots from the movie. They're staged, like, because they all look at the camera.
Oh yeah,
dead eye into the camera or smiling.
Except for Dutch. Like, I don't know if they couldn't get Schwarzenegger to do this or whatever, but. It looks like a scene from the movie.
Is it,
yeah,
the
it just reminds me of like beating a Zelda game, and it's like, let's check in on everyone you met in the village.
Right. Yeah.
Like, everything's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Anna's in the chopper, right? At the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could have used a little more with her in this. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like a weird choice to just kind of have her exit the movie for the last 30 minutes and then just pop back up at the end. Like, I don't know.
Tells her where the chopper zone is and is like, go. And, you know, I agree that like her just kind of disappearing so Arnold can have his big mano a mano moment is a little convenient, but like her character is not that well defined. Like the actress is good, but like there's just not a lot there.
That's kind of my problem, is they don't give her enough screen time or material to work with. Like, I kind of expected she would be involved in the effort to take the thing down at the end.
I mean, her disappearing is no more ridiculous than her being literally the one person they don't kill out of dozens and dozens of people in that camp. Like, it's just, sure, oh yeah, the one time Arnold's like, actually, you know, I'm gonna hit someone with the butt of my gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nonetheless.
And you don't even get like a debrief. You don't get like even radio chatter that's like, what the hell happened out there? Darn explosion. He
says it all, man.
Yeah. You don't get anything. It's just credits.
It's not the commando thing where the general's like, leave anything for us, John?
Yeah.
Just bodies. Credits.
Yep.
Or like, you know, no declassified, like no like top men with like, you know, doing the sealing up the file. We can never talk about this.
They're giving him a medal.
Well, there's more. I think Predator 2 gets to some of that stuff because there is like a whole government agency tracking the Predator aspect of that movie, which is Gary Busey of all people. It's look, we're gonna get to Predator in due time.
But I mean, the Predator got down there and stuff. He didn't just drop out of orbit himself. Where's the ship? Where's it? Where's everything? We gotta
presumably
know the answers.
It blew up along with everything else within a several mile radius, I guess. So it's a very small nuke, but enough to do some damage.
Oh, well, the ship flies off at the beginning.
No, I'm saying the pod.
But there's like that capsule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took that more as just some kind of drop pod kind of thing. But yeah.
I don't know. So many. What's in the jump? What's left there? Brad, what did you think of this movie?
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty damn good, right?
Yes. It works.
Are you glad you saw it?
It works. Yes, for sure.
Okay. So now that we're here, we have to do our rankings.
Okay.
Where are we putting this one, boys?
I'm gonna put this. Okay, I'm just gonna just read down my list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna still say Jaws, Das Boot, Red October. I'll go Predator, Crimson, Close Encounters.
Okay,
I'm gonna stick it right in the middle there. Yeah,
I'm gonna go. We're finally gonna deviate from one another a little bit. I'm gonna put Predator over Hunt for Red October.
Ooh, okay.
Just because it was a much more formative movie for me.
Okay.
But I think they're kind of neck and neck for me, but they're both McTiernan movies, obviously, but I like Predator maybe just a little bit more.
All right. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Brad, how you feeling?
It's up there. I don't know. Hard to say.
Yeah.
I'd say Crimson Tide is still the thing I have enjoyed watching the most, but this is definitely number two or number three. It's like, in terms, like, again, I'm not talking about like what is like high cinema here.
No, it's about what do we enjoy the most.
The fun that I have had watching these movies, it is this. Crimson Tide and Jaws are the top three.
Sure.
I would say.
Would I like Crimson Tide? I haven't seen it.
Oh, you would love Crimson Tide.
Dude. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have much of it. It's a submarine movie, right?
Yeah.
That's like I said, there are like three or four shots in that thing that are like, holy shit, this is just Metal Gear Solid. Like, oh, wow. Oh, my God. Okay. That's where he got that look.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
Huh. It's a submarine movie by Tony Scott and produced by Bruckheimer and Simpson.
Dude,
you
should watch Crimson Tide.
I should probably see Crimson Tide.
It's Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman just chewing the scenery and
like
spitting it out into
fucking
the ocean.
Like screaming in each other's faces a lot.
I'm in. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm making a note right now to watch Crimson Tide.
I would like to hear what you think of this movie.
Okay.
I know what you think of Predator, Dan. I'm sure this ranks very highly in whatever, you know, film school cinematic list that you have.
From the ones you just listed, I think I would do Jaws is a super formative one for me. So Jaws is probably my number one. Predator just below that. I did just recently watch Close Encounters, and it's good. It's good.
It's a great
movie. Yeah, I watched
it
when Nope was coming out. I was kind of like, oh, I'm in the mood to watch Close Encounters. And it's still really good. I wouldn't say it's like the most exciting watch today, but
you haven't seen the 3.5-hour director's cut of Das Boot, Dan?
No, I haven't seen. Drew had me watch Hunt for Red October, but I think that's the only submarine movie I've seen. Okay. Yeah, yep.
Hunt's good.
Hunt is
good. I like Hunt for Red October.
We were drinking 40s during it, so I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we don't do that for this podcast. Maybe that's for the best. All right. Well, that is another movie in the books, folks. That is our time with Predator. Dan, thank you so much for joining us on this one. Would you like to come back in a few
I would
weeks
love
and
to
do
come
Predator 2?
Anytime. Predator 2? Yes, because I don't remember shit about that, except for it's like, isn't it set in the far-flung future of 1997?
Yes, it is. In the crime-ridden, far-flung future of Los Angeles 1997.
Yes, I would like to come back.
Where every police detective has a laser sight on their pistol.
Beautiful. Yes, I would like to watch that. And also, can we put on the homework? Isn't there a music video that they shot on the set of Predator 2 with Danny Glover? Like a really
yes.
weird, like, I don't think it was ever released, but it's like a,
yes, that is,
for the cast and crew.
Yes.
I will find this.
No.
Find that. We should watch that too afterwards.
I will put that on the drive. We will watch that.
Okay. Excellent. But yes, I am in.
Well, Predator 2 will be coming in 2 weeks from the time when this podcast goes live. I have like four in the hopper right now, so I don't know exactly when, what date on what thing is happening. But 2 weeks from this episode going live will be Predator 2. But next week, we return to the world of Star Trek. We will finally be watching the pilot episode, The Cage, and the two-part episode, The Menagerie. So get hype for that. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, everyone at home, for watching with us and listening with us. We'll see you next time on the Next Lander Watchcast.